Welcome to Scenes, conversations in culture with the people who know it best. We chat with guests across music, art, fashion, film, sport, and technology in a bid to understand the scenes we love that little bit better. I'm Costi, your new host, and today, alongside my lovely co-host Ruby, we dive deep into the world of esports and gaming with a true expert in this scene, Craig Santakia. We talk everything from building digital experiences inside Roblox and Fortnite to working with world-famous brands like Monster Energy, Nike, and Gucci. Now, as I'm sure you'll realize, Craig is a man whose passion for this scene holds no bounds. So without further ado, this is the esports and gaming scene brought to you by Truant London. Inside the Scene studio today, we have none other than the managing director of Wolfpad Gaming and the former partner development director of Fnatic, one of the biggest esports organizations in the world. Here is a man who's worked on huge names like Nike, BMW, and Gucci. This guy is Mr. Craig Santakia.
Ah, you got it. Yes. Thank you very much. That's one heck of an intro. So thank you. Thank you for having me and for the opportunity. So I really appreciate it.
Lovely to have you here. We also have Ruby in the booth.
In the booth?
In the booth, in the studio, in the room, in the podcast. So Craig, before we plummet into the depths of gaming and esports scene, we want to start light, okay? How would you describe your experience with this scene, gaming and esports, in three words, your experience?
Absolutely mind-blowing. I did actually write down another one. This one's a bit more cheesy, I think, but fundamentally game-changing. So there's a pun for you.
That's a good one.
But it's been great to me, man. It's like it's changed my life, and I've done some really weird and wacky, incredible things, and experienced new, amazing stuff, I suppose. So, it's been a fun old ride, and hopefully many more to come, I suppose. I'm very grateful, by the way, that the aircon's on in here now, not a drippy, sweaty mess like I was earlier.
The listener, we're recording on a very hot day in a very
very hot lights in the room. Yeah.
So a lovely little bit of
content. Now, hopefully that's a soft enough intro into things anyway. But yeah, absolutely mind-blowing, I think.
Nice. So today we're going to be talking about esports and gaming, and we can't wait to hear the story of how you got to this point in your career. However, we want to hear a little bit first about Wolfpad.
So I suppose Wolfpad was born out of the challenge that I was experiencing a lot, which was at a brand, a CMO or CEO would typically say, yeah, we have to be in gaming or we have to be in esports. And this message would pass down the organization to a senior director. That senior director might have, you know, really good gig in football or golf or whatever it is. And they just go, oh, you know, I haven't got the time to take this on. I don't really care too much about it. I don't know enough about it. So the message kind of filters all the way down the organization. The most junior person puts their hand up and goes, I'm a gamer. And they go, right, put together our gaming and esports strategy, you know. And they come back 6 months later with a piece of work that's probably not up to a particular standard. And the director basically has a decision to make to either outsource it to an agency or take it on themselves. And and that's where Wolfpad was kind of born out of, trying to hopefully solve that challenge, which is ensuring that we can provide a specialist service when it comes to consultation, to sponsorship, and to digital experiences within gaming culture. So that includes esports as well as, you know, Roblox and Fortnite and these other platforms. So that's how it all kind of came about, and essentially what we do.
Right. So that's kind of your journey into it as well. Then you kind of spotted that behavior that was happening within agency culture, noticed it was like not right, and you kind of went to go and change that.
So I think during my time at Fnatic, worked with some incredible brands, and you know, the kind of the message coming across was always the same, which was, we don't know what we're doing, we don't know what our objectives are. You know, basically draw it out for us. And so a lot of the pitches that we used to do, even though we were a rights holder with, you know, 25 million fans worldwide and essentially just ran like a football club, but in esports, which I suppose is difficult for some people to get their head around. But But we used to put together these pitches, and I was just like, we're doing all the creative strategy here. We're doing all the marketing. We're doing everything for this client as if we are a fully fledged agency anyway. Yeah. So basically just took that concept and built my own business off the back of that. And then obviously what was happening with technology in the space in general when it came to games becoming open platforms, things like Roblox and Fortnite, for example. We then kind of pivoted into this digital space kind of realm. So we can now help not only on the creative with building like a Roblox experience, but we can actually help build it. We could help market it and everything in between. So it's this kind of more holistic kind of 360 approach to gaming and esports within Wolfpad, which is super exciting. Yeah. So yeah, it's been fun.
Because I don't know, until we met you, I just never thought, even conceptualized that kind of brand structure like existing, but it makes so much sense. They need the sort of guidance I don't know, marketing and everything.
And just for like the, just for the listener, definitely not for me. When you say open platform or an open game, what does that really mean?
So I suppose the best way to explain it is kind of the evolution of gaming. So back when I was a kid, you would typically go to PC World and, you know, you'd buy an on-the-counter game and it would be a single player game, right? Yeah. And you would go onto that game on your PC or, you know, console, whatever, and complete all the levels. And also, I keep knocking this mic. Complete all the levels, and that was it, pretty much. That then, obviously, the internet came along, and with that came multiplayer. So you were then to, all of a sudden, not just complete these individual levels as a single kind of gamer. You could open it up, and things like Call of Duty really changed the scene, right? Where you would have all these huge mega battles going on, but on an internet multiplayer environment. And then all of a sudden, storytelling kind of came out of that. So then the single player level mode turned into, you know, like a F1 Breaking Point, if you've heard of that, where it's basically, it's a whole story around characters that live inside of the game that mixes real world with virtual and all these type of really cool things. And then off the back of that, you've kind of seen the further evolution, which is these open platforms, which is where people will no longer just go to play a game to actually play a physical game. They'll go on there to socialize, to be entertained, to consume content. You know, people are spending on average 2.5 hours a day on Roblox. So you're not doing that just a game, right? You're going on there because you're shopping with your friends at the mall type thing, right? But it's all online. So it's all these type of things. So so that's kind of how it's evolving, and that's where open platforms has really come to the forefront. So Roblox has been around for ages, and it's essentially an encyclopedia of games, but they label them as experiences. So you go onto the platform to be like a prison officer in one experience, or to play Roller Coaster Tycoon type stuff in another, right? And everything in between. So it's really cool.
Believe it or not, I actually went on a date in Fortnite.
Did you actually?
I did, yeah.
Oh, wow. How was that?
I had to download it and never played it before. And noticed actually that she was just like, yeah, this is like quite a common thing. Just a world I had no idea was happening. Yeah. And because you don't even necessarily have to get straight into the action. Yeah. You have like your space. It's a big map.
Yeah.
You're exploring and chatting. You don't have to necessarily.
That's so funny. That's sick.
So what did you do? Which map did you go on? And
oh, I don't know what map in Fortnite. I do remember being terribly bad because I was playing on my laptop
and
she was playing on a console.
Yeah.
And I didn't even have a mouse, so I was trying to do it with the track.
Oh, no.
I was getting a new card. She had to kind of like lift me out
and
map herself.
That's anyway, like digital and analog, you know? Yeah. Like, is that a big difference?
Oh my God, that's amazing.
And how did the date go? Second date?
No.
Oh.
No.
Damn.
No, but anyway, back to the scene. But that is really interesting. Open platform is something amazing. I feel like we've cracked into this now. But fundamentally, I feel like there's another thing I don't fully understand, which is the difference between gaming and esports. How would you define the two?
Yeah, it's a great question. So so esports is gaming on a competitive and professional nature, or level rather. So for example, if us three here were to play a game of, you know, Call of Duty or FIFA, whatever it is, it would be, you know, fun, it would be competitive, even though I'm rubbish, but still it would be competitive in some capacity and it would be fun, right? But by no means could we say that we're professionals at it, that we've spent, you know, 10, 12 hours a day, six yeah. days a week playing yeah. this game and know the meta of what it actually is. So, you know, esports professionals, for example, on a game called Counter-Strike, which is a first-person shooter title, very much yeah. like Call of Duty, the guys there know what angle the mouse needs to be at in order to get and hit the gun at a certain point in the screen. And yeah. like they live in like this weird mathematical yeah. world,
it's
right?
Like training for a real sport as well.
Yeah, 100%. Sport, yeah. So that's esports. So it's that very intense kind of professional environment, whereas gaming is a lot more casual, right? It's a lot more what we've just talked about where, you know, you go on to Fortnite for a date or you know, you go on to Roblox to go and shop for new virtual items with your friends. Yeah. So it's a very more casual kind of atmosphere. But yeah, that's the main distinction.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of real, like, I know at least in Formula One, there's a lot of the actual drivers that are performing in esports and simulator leagues. Mm. And a lot of them talk about, like, this isn't just a game. Like, this is like high performance, like
yep.
we're athletes, we mm-hmm. train
yep.
and we're part of a league and there's people that are better than me. This is like the yeah. the F1 like sort of world champion saying, like, there are people who are better than me
yep.
at this particular sport and I'm actually kind of like mid-table working my way up.
Yeah,
and that's really interesting. So is it like in other sports where like kids now can kind of one aspire to be an esports athlete, but are there like academies that they can go and train at? Is there like places where they can go and, you know, learn their skills and like refine their skills?
Yeah, so there's a mix really in terms of the pathway to getting to being a pro. So in terms of the professional nature of and structure of the industry, within esports, there's three main stakeholders, right? Sorry, I might be jumping ahead a little bit here, but so there's three main stakeholders. So you've got like the publishers, people who make the games, you've got the esports teams and the talent, mm-hmm. And you've got the event organizers. And basically all three collaborate with each other mm-hmm. and all three help one another, because without one, the other fails, essentially. And when it comes to the talent and the rights holders, there are academies, but they're few and far between, primarily because they're very expensive to run. So Paris Saint-Germain, for example, have like their own academy within esports. Then the team that I used to work for, Fnatic, we had a couple of academy teams, but that evolved into what's called a HPU, a high performance unit.
Yeah.
And that basically encompasses the kind of the more coaching infrastructure. So you'll have like psychologists, you know, personal trainers, chefs, all this type of stuff. So when it comes to the pathway, you can go down the academy route, but typically what happens is universities kind of fill the gap. So right. there's quite a big culture around university leagues. Mm-hmm. And typically what teams like Fnatic would do, this is going to probably sound bonkers, but they'll have like a scouting network.
No way.
Yeah.
Gotta do it, man.
Yeah. Basically they'll discover people through either the university or they'll have like, you know, mini tournaments will go on and someone's really good or whatever it is. Or some of them actually have deals with event organizers or publishers around data. So it's really interesting and in how you like, basically, if you clock up, let's say like, I don't know, 1,000 hours or something on FIFA,
yeah.
you got a certain win percentage, certain goal ratio or whatever it is, you'll be like a blip on the radar. They'll look into you more, ask players right. about you, all this type of stuff, and then invite you for, you know, a trial or sign you for or whatever it is. So it's a whole like network. So but the universities really help plug that gap for the yeah. teams. They really do.
That's amazing. So beyond it being like really fun, and I think that's something that is such a big part of gaming, is it something that is there a bigger incentive beyond just like the fun and experience of it? Because esports, it is a competitive nature. There is like a real like serious element of like competition there.
Yeah.
But ultimately, there must be a bigger prize. And I know, is that something monetary? Is that something like fame and sponsorship? Mm-hmm. What is the real incentive for these athletes?
I suppose it depends on the individual athlete. But when you talk about prize pools, there's a game called Dota, which has the biggest prize pool, which is over $30 million, for example. Yes, it's not pocket change, right?
No, you can... it's not competing for like a £50 voucher.
Yeah. Amazon voucher. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is it's pretty crazy. And then the professional players themselves, I mean, if you play League of Legends, you're very good at it. You can be on $500,000 base a year, probably more than that now over the last few years. Sponsorships come into play as well, and certain brands that you work with. You know, some of the players work with like Ralph Lauren, for example, and create their own line and like all this weird stuff. So it's pretty cool, man. I suppose it depends what really drives somebody. But if it's money, you can definitely make it, but it's very competitive. If it's fame, you can also definitely achieve that. The fan base is intense, like, and it's very, very passionate, which is brilliant. And typically the fans will follow a player, an individual talent, rather than a team, which is obviously a big challenge for the teams, but also a huge opportunity for the talent. So yeah, it really depends what you want to achieve, but you could definitely do all of it. Just like how a footballer is the same, right? A footballer are driven by money, some are driven by ambition, some are driven by whatever it is. And it's the same in esports.
And in that respect, because I know there's this idea now, you can't just be like an athlete just for your talent and your skill, or like, even if you can't just be like an artist, you have to have this social media presence. You have to have the YouTube. You have to have like the charisma.
Like the influencer side of it in a weird way, if that makes any sense. But like the online presence as well as it's the same with, I guess, like soccer sports personalities having the online presence as well as the talent to back it up.
Yeah.
Or like the social presence.
Yeah. Is that the same with esports then? Do they have to kind of have that? Like you say, people are really supportive of the one individual athlete instead of the team. Do they have to have like the popularity through social media, or is it purely through like going to see them perform in these esports events?
I think it's changing. So historically, it used to be all about, you know, an esports fan would watch an esports player because they wanted to improve their skills. They loved watching someone that was so good at what the game that they love playing themselves. Whereas now, I think with the rise of influencers in the last, you know, 5-10 years, that attitude is kind of shifting a little bit. So now there is actually a movement kind of going on where professional players are quitting early and becoming influencers instead, because they're finding out they can get just as much money with way less work. A lot of esports players will burn out at about 26. So if you're playying esports professionally at 26 and over, you're a veteran. You're the OG.
It's really interesting. I think one of the articles you sent over, they mentioned that there were some like mega esports players. Names are slipping away from me now.
That's okay.
But you know, training like 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, and they figure out they can make when they go solo, I guess, and like make their own streaming platforms, and they're out of these like contractual obligations that sometimes they're put in with how much they can stream on their own when they're in leagues, and they can make just as much, if not more, money.
Exactly.
And also build like what you were saying, kind of a cult of personality around them and become, you know, known for, I guess, themselves as opposed to being in a league.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of, I suppose it's a bit similar to music artists, and you know, like when they sign with a record label versus when they have their own production studio, you know, there's a bit of a shift going more that you have your own studio now rather than sign your soul away type thing. So I think it's quite a bit of a similarity in regards to that, but you're exactly right, they've figured it out that actually that now the payouts are so good on platforms like, well, live streaming like Twitch versus the sponsorships versus YouTube content. Like, you know, you can get paid doing Twitter posts now, right? From what they've just recently implemented. So it's all very, they're just realizing that they can be their own businesses and they don't necessarily have to rely anymore on the kind of like the big boss to get the payout. So yeah, some people will enjoy that, others won't, right? But you're exactly right.
And with the kind of money you're talking about as well, it sounds like they can afford the team. It doesn't have to be like totally self-sufficient. They can afford to have like a team around them that keeps them going. And it sounds like they're getting good investment.
Big money.
So I'd love to actually now talk a little bit about one thing that a lot of people assume of gaming. I think at least we kind of did as well, is like there's this connection to brands like energy drinks, for example.
Yeah.
However, we've seen from your work, you've actually managed to get brands like Gucci and L'Oreal working in this space.
Mm-hmm.
What's the process behind that? And how do you do that with a brand that's not typically seen as like a gamer brand?
Yeah, I mean, some of the work that we've done is, you know, or I've done rather in previous roles, it really depends on the objective of the client. So, you know, BMW, for example, you look at it and you go like, why on earth is BMW sponsoring an esports team? Like, it makes no sense, really, does it? You know, if you think about it. But their challenge was they described themselves as the old white guy in the room, right?
Mm-hmm.
And no one really wanted to be the old white guy in the room, right? Because your granddad, you've done like type thing, right? We want young and hip and innovative. And so they were like, we need to reinvent the brand, like, you know, to this new generation. We understand that a 20-year-old is not going to be able to buy a BMW. Like, they were like, we know that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the next 10 years, they're going to be able to buy a BMW. And we want their perception to be that we're young, we're cool, we're innovative, we're technology driven, all these values that align with esports. Yeah. And so it made sense from that standpoint and that messaging to actually partner with somebody like Fnatic. So that's what we could do with those type of brands. Gucci was a bit different. We were trying to merge the virtual and the physical world when it comes to fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So we created a limited edition Fnatic Gucci watch.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we did is we promoted it via our biggest team at the time, the League of Legends team. And we got them to go to the Milan Fashion Week as a VIP guest.
Wow.
So they were on like the front row of the catwalk and all this stuff. And they met like the creative director of Gucci and got the proper VIP treatment. It was great. The watch sold out very, very quickly. And it was kind of like this, the messaging there was, we're merging the virtual gaming world and the physical world of fashion coming together. That was the message there. That's then evolved for them, albeit it was with a different company this time moving forward. But they went and created Gucci Garden, which lives inside of Roblox.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
Is it like its own map or some kind of world?
It's its own world. Yeah, correct. And in there, someone brought a Gucci bag for $4,000. So,
no way.
Yeah. And that to me just really demonstrated how social structures have changed for this generation. And how virtual assets are just as valuable as real life.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're spending 10, 15% of your day inside a virtual world, you're going to value the stuff within it, right? Mm-hmm. And that to me just really exaggerated the point that we've gotten to that stage now where social structures have kind of flipped on its head almost, because I value real world things, right? That's just me, I suppose. I'm old school, but you know,
pen and paper.
So it's like, you know, whereas for a young kid, that's completely different, right? Mm-hmm. You know, virtual Gucci handbag is worth $4,000 to that individual.
Oh,
so,
for sure.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's probably like their parents' credit card on it as well. But that's amazing. So talk a little bit about Roblox then, because for anyone that might not know, like, what is it and how has it gained such a huge success, a huge popularity?
Because that's like, in my very novice amateur opinion, like the title that gets thrown around the most outside of the gaming world of people trying to kind of tap into that kind of digital world. A lot of it goes to Fortnite and Roblox. I mean, there's so many more, but those are like kind of the ones that come to mind also.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the brands essentially need to be where the audiences are, right? Mm-hmm. And the audience are in primarily two platforms, Fortnite and Roblox. There's other ones that are evolving. There's like a South Korean company that's getting loads of traction at the moment. I think it's at like 20 million a month or 20 monthly active users, or maybe even more. Where it's, but anyway, I'm getting sidetracked. But yeah, but going back to Roblox and Fortnite stuff. So, I mean, Roblox has been around since 2004. Mm-hmm. So it's actually, people think it's only like 3-4 years old. It's really not. And what what they really cracked and really understood early doors is the concept of letting the community drive what it becomes, what it is. So creators are a huge part of Roblox. I mean, this year they're going to pay out $800 million to creators, which is big. And they basically just give them free rein to do what they want. And with that comes the beauty of being a human being, which is creativity. And
yeah.
And they've created spaces where it's safe for community members to interact with one another via a virtual environment. So, you know, Roblox has 60 billion messages a month, which is
more than WhatsApp.
Yeah, more than WhatsApp.
No way.
Yeah. Isn't that nuts?
Yeah. Well, more than WhatsApp. Yeah, it's crazy.
So what kind of stuff are you actually performing in the game? What is the, when you say like they've got all of this money that they're giving to creators, is it creating like areas? Is it like what exactly are they creating?
Well, it's a mix really, but primarily you're creating virtual experiences. So that experience can be, well, they're broken up into genres, which are essentially categories. So you'll have like horror, you'll have simulation, you'll have role play, you'll have, you know, town and city, everything and everything in between. And basically, you'll build an IP, a game IP that will fit into that genre. Mm-hmm. And then the mechanics and way it works is you have like a search and discovery screen. Mm-hmm. And basically, you can put in keywords. It will suggest a list of different IPs or experiences for you to jump into. And then you can go away and just explore. Primarily, so out of the 2.5 hours that people will spend a day on Roblox, about 20-25% of your time is spent actually on your avatar. Mm-hmm. So your avatar will be just this virtual version of yourself, and you can use it as a way to express your individuality, to express whoever you want to be. But I've seen some data recently that it's 46% of individuals that have a digital avatar in Gen Z, they actually make the avatar itself very similar to them in real life.
Yeah.
So they don't actually go too kind of wild.
Yeah, because I was going to ask about how do you think like the kind of, the avatar process is such a big part of it.
Yeah.
And like how that impacts young people and self-expression, and maybe, and not maybe in a way that's like an insecurity way of like, oh, I wish I looked like this, but just being able to express themselves in these like really crazy out there ways that you wouldn't really do in real life, like elf ears or rainbow hair or loads of piercings everywhere. And
yeah.
Neck tattoos.
Chest piece.
Yeah, like a neck coming out of your head or something. Snake coming out of your head, sorry. No, you're right. So it is interesting because I actually initially thought that it was that you would create something weird and wacky, right? Mm-hmm. But that's really seems to not be the case. It is literally just a very close vertical replica of yourself. And what the, you know, on that same study, 49% of people were saying that they value the customizable kind of assets, i.e. wearables, as the most valuable thing for their avatar. So again, it's not really too dissimilar than us wearing different items of clothing today, right? It's like,
should have worn like a wizard cloak.
Yeah, exactly, like a cosplay. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so it's a really unique, fun platform, but they did crack that community aspect first, and also really driving home the message to creators to create whatever this will actually be.
Yeah.
And now they're reaping the rewards off it. They're doing a lot of smart things, but the platform predominantly was known as a kids platform. A lot of its users were under 16 historically. However, that's now changing and evolving. So their fastest growing sector is 17 to 24. They actually have more 17 to 24 players than Fortnite does, for example, now. So it's growing really quick.
You think it's I guess now young adults, not kids, that have grown up with the platform and maybe joined in, I don't know, 2010 when they were maybe 9 years old. And now they're probably late teens, early 20s, and they've just grown with the platform, I suppose? Or is it new people coming on? Or
yeah, I think it's a mix, but I think you've hit nail on the head primarily. But also, you know, again, I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but Roblox itself is obviously a public company now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with that comes investor pressure, or at least in my opinion, that comes with it. And investors typically, you know, and advertisers don't really like advertising too much to under 16s, right? Because it's a bit of a legal minefield. So from a business standpoint, an investor standpoint, it makes a lot more sense to try and mature that audience.
Yeah.
So that's been kind of a natural evolution with it. Mm-hmm. But there are definitely more users coming on the platform from other markets. So Roblox historically was very American, like very American focused. Even when the CEO talks, he talks sometimes just about USA data, and you're like, wow, okay. So
very American.
Yeah. But you know, Asia is a huge growing market for them, as is Europe, as is the Middle East, right? As Middle East, you know, is definitely starting to open up more servers. I mean, UAE banned Roblox until 2019 or 2021, I forgot.
Right.
So they're starting to open up all their markets and everything else now. So there's this huge opportunity there. And I think I heard the CEO say recently, so they're at 65 or 66 million daily active users, and he wants 1 billion. I think that's his target, which is
that's a big goal. But
that's a massive goal, right? But fair play, aim for the stars. But
not bad to aim for the stars.
Fair enough. So in this hypothetical world where you've got millions of people going through these communities within these games, like, where does advertising play a role that would be different from like your usual, let's just put our logo up on like commercial spaces? Like, what else is there to do in this space?
So advertising is kind of, I suppose, new to Roblox in particular, because again, like we've just talked about, it's been going on this journey. They've released a new kind of suite of advertising products that are called immersive ads. Mm-hmm. And so basically that varies from image ads, so, you know, typical billboard type stuff, through to what they call portals, which are just imagine a teleportal, right? And you can teleport from one place to the other, right? It's essentially the same. So they're kind of opening up these advertising suite products. And with that comes a huge opportunity for brands. So, you know, I'd like to think that we can move past the point of a 3-second engagement on Instagram as you, you know, massively going through your scrolling through your feed, versus what I know for a fact we can achieve, which is like, you know, 25, 30 minutes gameplay inside. So did some work with Lavazza in Fortnite years ago, and we managed to get an average playing time of 25 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's unheard of, right? In the advertising world, really.
And you normally get 5 seconds.
This engagement's huge. And then when if you think about what you can do with that time from a brand storytelling piece, it's humongous. So instead of just slapping your logo on a tin, instead we can tell the story of your brand through gaming, right? So if you're an orange juice company, we can create an experience where essentially telling the user about how you grow trees sustainably, orange trees, and how you pick them properly. And, you know, we can create characters that have been employed by the business, and you can learn about fair trade and all these type of amazing things. You could do a lot of stuff in 25, 30 minutes, right?
Yeah.
So it completely transforms the narrative.
And it feels like it makes it more community, like engaging with their community kind of meaningfully, as opposed to, like you said, just like sticking your label on a tin somewhere or you know, on social media, like, which is like the first place I think of where I see ads on the regular. It is very like you're just kind of reading it, you're waiting for it to skip so you can get to your YouTube video, whatever. But I feel like that's so important too, because gaming is so community focused in my perspective, that you want to engage with the community in like a fun and exciting way that doesn't, you know, kind of maybe irritate, like, you know, people who really like gaming and don't just want to watch a 20-second advert.
You know? Yeah, and you're right. And you know, the biggest challenge is you have to earn your right to play in that space. Yeah. That's what we say. So
okay.
It's like, how do we help you earn that right? Mm-hmm. And I suppose a simpler way of putting it is saying, you know, the example I love to give is, if you were Man United during the 90s and the skateboard revolution of the 90s, and you went to a skateboard park as Man United and say, you know, buy our Man United branded skateboard, it's amazing. Everyone's just going to go, what are you doing here? Like, you please leave. Like, why are you here?
Yeah.
And it's the same concept in these environments. So you have to earn your right to play, and you do that through community driven initiatives, which I know a lot of brands talk about it, but to actually do it is actually quite scary, I think, for a lot of brands, because they're afraid of the instant feedback. Yeah. But the beauty of gaming is that if you do it properly, and you know, you do it with the services of Wolfpack or whatever it is, but like if you do it properly and you have the right advice, that actually the results are insane. Mm-hmm. Honestly, what you can achieve in this space, and your imagination is your limitation. That's it. Everything else you can do. So let's be fun. Let's be creative. Let's kind of inspire the next generation, right? Yeah. And let's do away with, just because it was done that way and it's maybe always been that way, doesn't mean it's right. Let's do things differently with this space, because we have a unique opportunity here. So,
what's been, like, in your opinion, like, the craziest, zaniest kind of corporate, like, branding thing in a game that you've seen? And it can be one of your own from Fnatic as well. Just one that's like, it doesn't matter about the results, just one that really, while you were maybe like helping with it, sitting there doing it, or just seeing it being like, I could never imagine that this would be possible in gaming. That's
you don't have to name drop an old client, you can
fiction. You know what, I've already said BMW, but BMW is definitely a, like, what on earth moment. Literally, I was like, never in a million years would have thought that was possible. There was a client, involved with, as part of the Unilever group. And so we created a city in Roblox.
Yeah.
And it was me and my business partner at the time. And we basically were... It was for a hair brand. It's like a mega hair brand. And we were just like, oh man, we're doing this activation for women in markets like Mexico, the Philippines, and all these like amazing places in the world. And we're there as two white dudes. He's bald and I'm like half balding. And I was just like, what are we doing? Like, creating this for women in Mexico and Philippines stuff. And South Korea and that. And so we were like, right. So we brought a load of women gamers into the whole creative process and let them kind of run the show essentially for a little bit. Because, you know, they're the target market, right? Yeah. So they know best, they know better than us. Yeah. So, and we were putting all of this together, and we got some amazing influencers involved. We were really excited with the creative. The client was loving it. And we went live and we were just like, right, you know, you kind of, you don't hit a burn, but it's almost like, you know, you hit the go live burn. And it went viral. And we were just like, wow, this is bonkers. Like, sitting back, I was like, it's two European guys have got a hair brand. And in these like amazing emerging markets, we've managed to create this viral campaign in Roblox. It's got like over 42 million plays or whatever. And the beauty of it was that we built a campaign all around the messaging of, sorry, I know I'm rambling a little bit here, where basically we wanted to help women in these markets that typically society would say, you know, you get married at 19 and your kid at 21 and and we were saying, well, maybe you don't want to do that. Maybe you want to be a streamer, or maybe you love gaming, or, you know, you're probably playing Roblox. So why don't we try and express your individuality of who you are as a human being through one thing that is incredibly individual to everybody, which is your hair. And that aligned really nicely with obviously the client and what they're trying to do. So your shampoo. So what we did is we built this city where each kind of influencer that had a very similar story of kind of, you know, rising up, I suppose, against society's norms and expressing their individuality, we brought them into the process, and each part of the city had a storyline based around that individual. that they could relate to, which then meant the community and the fans could relate to it. So it became this like really cool thing. And then we got loads of different hairstyles. So even something as simple as like having a black afro on Roblox at the time was incredibly rare slash didn't really exist. So we enabled people to do that. And that was like a huge thing itself. So we had all these UGCs, user-generated content, virtual items, through the expressions of hair. And we managed to just let loads of women empower themselves, which was so amazing. And then we tied it one step further and we created, we gave away vouchers that were worth £500 up to 500 quid, where you could do like an online course. Mm-hmm. So if your influencer was a famous streamer, so you had to go to a third party website to place, but you won them in the game by completing a mini challenge or game itself. And then basically, you know, if you followed your favorite influencer that was a streamer and you wanted to be a streamer, you could then go and have a streaming course to £500, which is great because, you know, maybe you can't afford it or maybe you just don't have access to it or didn't realize it existed. So it was called like this brand do action, and it was brilliant. And that was, apart from the BMW stuff, that was probably a moment where I sat there just going like, we've either got incredibly lucky or we're decent at what we do. So it was really cool. It was one of the most successful branded experiences on Roblox in Roblox history. So it was really cool.
It's crazy to think of the ones that work and like how happy people are to engage with something that is just fun. Mm. You find a lot of brands now like turning off like their comments on Instagram and on YouTube and really just creating like this passive experience where it's like, here's our ad, you want to skip it, you want to do whatever you want, just go for it. But this is kind of what we say, instead of like inviting them into a place like you say where they could like even purchase something like a Gucci bag or even participate in something like interactive storytelling or like explore their own identity through some of these experiences, which is really cool. I think that just hearing this stuff, especially that last story, debunks this idea of a gamer just being like a guy who sat alone in his room with a headset and maybe like a really tight t-shirt, just kind of like only doing it for the sake of like themselves and like them not wanting like a rich experience from that.
It's crazy to me because you think of the gaming stereotype and you think of, like you've said, a man sat on his own, normally like in his mother's basement or something.
In a tight t-shirt.
In the tight white t-shirt. Yeah.
That's the important detail.
It sets it apart. Yeah. But it's crazy because like listening to what you've been saying about the community, it's so community oriented. Mm. It's such a, like, I'm sure, you know, stereotypes exist everywhere. Can't speak for everyone, but it just sounds way more like diverse and accessible than it gets depicted in the media sometimes. Yeah. And I'm sure that does have its problems, but
in America alone, 46% of all gamers are female. But you'd never think that, right? When you go to like an esports event, you'll see about how diverse it is. So you know, there's a number of different reasons why there's the myth and the stereotype, I suppose. I suppose historically, it probably was more your, you know, I'm talking like 20 years ago now, probably was more your individual who maybe didn't fit in and was on the outskirts of society type thing. And, you know, they could go online and on Second Life or whatever it was and really escape it, right? And be whoever they wanted to be. But as technology became more accessible and gaming started opening up more to, you know, becoming these open platforms and the mobile phone really changing everything, I suppose, all of a sudden now those kind of stereotypes are being debunked and, you know, it is becoming a lot more accessible to a lot more people and therefore you're getting a much diverse audience. There's still a lot of work to be done. You know, a lot of the data out there is also skewed because females, I mean, I've seen firsthand some of the toxicity a female gamer gets. It's like, it's bonkers. And a lot of females will hide their identity and pretend they're male just because they can't be bothered with the abuse.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them, to be honest. So, you know, there's a lot when you see all the data points and like, you know, it's all male. It's actually not. And when you go to these events live, especially the esports events, you'll see like it's a pretty much 50-50 split. And then you got all these amazing subcultures that are community driven, like cosplay, that come into to the fold, which are just amazing. When you see people spend so much time and money and just energy on these costumes, and they're so proud, and you got these incredible competitions. It's one of the reasons why I fell in love with esports, you know. And my journey on that started way back in like 2015, but it's definitely a really cool part of the industry, you know.
There's clearly a lot of love for the scene. There's people who are like, you know, it's more than just a game. It's like their lifestyle. Yeah. It's the way in which they create their community. It's the way they keep in touch. And we were chatting the other day just how there are some people now hosting meetings, like professional meetings, right, in these spaces.
Yeah.
Like it's even entering like our work lives. And there's something quite interesting in that. But to go back to what you were saying a moment ago, just about, because it really struck a chord about like how some women are sort of hiding their identities and trying to remove themselves from this space because they might not necessarily feel safe. And it reminds me of sort of the same scrutiny that we put on some social media platforms.
Yeah. It's
like, how are we going to keep people safe? And from your experience and your expertise about the scene, what do you think is like the biggest change that will help people feel even more like safe in these spaces?
So, I mean, let's just take Roblox, right? So Roblox's biggest department in terms of the business itself, in terms of people, is actually its moderation and department, and basically like regulation safety department. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest department in the whole business, which I think summarizes pretty well, actually, how things are becoming a lot safer. But also when we talk about community, self-regulation is a big thing as well. So, you know, so Roblox will have essentially bots that will help monitor traffic when it comes to text and, when it comes to text communication. And then basically you can just kick anyone out that's not abiding by the rules. But also the community can hire essentially kind of like a neighborhood watch kind of thing. Yeah. Right. And then so it becomes like self-regulating almost. Mm. So they're getting really, really good at it. I know they're doing a lot of clever stuff on the back end when it comes to like AI and picking up on things really quick. So that's part of it's kind of like growing up, I suppose. And what they're doing now is they're creating like 17 plus experiences only.
Yeah, I saw that. It's interesting because that also ties into the kind of ethics of advertising.
Yeah, so exactly.
It's a bit safer to advertise in those kind of age moderated spaces, the same way that like TikTok, if you're under 18, it's like they are some weird, like they really filter what any sponsoring or sponsorship can come up on your feed.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all done via, you know, like when you sign up to a new bank, like a Monzo or a Revolut or something, you have to hold your camera up and say like, you know, I am Craig Santikia, and you know, do all this weird turning your head stuff.
Most embarrassing that, video ever.
Yeah, I don't, imagine being the person regular like who watches that. They must like have some weird stuff on their PC, man. Like, but anyway, but it's like you go through a similar kind of filtering process for safety now on Roblox. So It's definitely getting safer. There's obviously a lot to do, but it's one of those things where it's like it's a society problem. So as much as it is a technology problem, so you know it's a really difficult one, because how do you put accountability on a society issue, right? And and when you have to work with governments, then obviously that just ends up being a mess in the best of cases. So it's a real tricky one, but it is getting better. But there's still a lot to do.
Haters gonna hate, basically.
Yeah,
They'll always be trying. They'll always be trying to show.
Yeah, exactly. And especially
police.
Yeah.
Inside the game.
Imagine. They pretty much are.
That neighborhood watch, right?
Yeah. They pretty much are. And I mean, like, on some experiences, you can actually be a policeman or a policewoman on it. And you can pay to like, you could do weird things like pay to be a prison officer or something, and then you control all the prisoners for like a certain period of time,
like,
and all this
Stanford
stuff. It's like Prison Break. But on Roblox form. They essentially already exist, when it comes to safety, there's a lot you can do kind of, I suppose, legally and technology wise, but when it comes to the society aspect of it. You know, a lot of times, well, you're dealing with young kids, right? And, you know, did we all say some stupid stuff on the playground at one point in our lives? I'm sure we all did, right? But you had a teacher there or your friends there to tell you that it's not right and should stop doing it. And maybe we just need a bit more of that on the education front.
Exactly. So that's probably the anon. Oh, I can never say this word. Anonymity. Yes, that word of it all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hitting that on the head.
Yeah, so you get a lot of people feeling as though they can hide behind it. But the people who really can't hide are the people who are the brands. They're trying they need to kind of go in and typically with everything they go in and try and, like you say, make the experience like better or extend what is possible, create a new type of experience. There's like a lot of people out there and typically like all brands kind of want to do it for attention, but to like break the conventional behavior. Do you think that works in the same way in games? You know, like that idea of like, oh, what if we do a stunt in a game? Do you think that has the same connection and meaning, or is that just like advertising going back to its like, you know, short-term viral side?
It did have a place, I suppose, like 2019. You know, there's loads of examples. You know, the Travis Scott concert, for example, was a great was that a stunt, or I suppose you could claim it was a stunt, but you know, a lot of brands first moved into the space and went, right, one-off PR, we want global coverage, this, and when it comes to the amount of coverage you're going to get for this expenditure that it was to actually build that experience, it was actually probably quite cheap for them for PR expense. So they were like, right, one-off PR, let's do it. And they kind of tick that box internally, right? Be able to go to their boss and say, we've just had 20 million people in one concert. Like, you know, it's impossible to achieve in real life. We've done it, you know, big tick. And it's like, everyone's patting each other on the back, like, well done. That time's kind of been and gone now. So over the last like year and a half, I'd say, brands are starting to tap into the need to be a bit more strategic now. So they're going, right, maybe we've done that one-off PR, or maybe they didn't. Right, what is the next 5 to 10 years looking like in this space? And they're going on this education cycle, especially while the market's not brilliant right now. They're going into that education cycle and being like, right, how do we really do this properly? Which is great. But there's still a lot of examples of just going in and building something and thinking everyone's going to go to it, right? They haven't earned that right.
Like, and interact in the way that you would. I remember going to like a gig in Fortnite and very few were like stood there appreciating to the music. A lot of people were just sort of like just roaming around, running, trying to hit each other. I went to a short film festival in Fortnite.
You've been to loads of things.
The short film festival was part of the day, actually. We went and watched a movie, thought it was quite cute. But that aside, we went and it was literally just people, like not many people were there sat watching a film because as much as it sounds like this sexy headline, like, you know, they hold short film festival, the first ever short film festival in Fortnite. It's like, I get it. It's novel, you can game, but you're not actually connecting with people and you're not really recognizing some of the stuff that you were talking about a moment ago about like building a community, building an experience, giving people the opportunity to do something they wouldn't typically be able to do, and using the platform in a way that's actually like, you know,
telling
interesting.
Telling a story.
Exactly. Like, what are you going to do with it after? Right. Yeah. That's what I always say to them. Like, okay, right, you do one off, you know, thing, a one off PR event. Well, what are you going to do with that asset after? You're just going to let it sit there and rot? Like, have you downloaded Discord? Have you created a Discord server? And they're like, what's that? And you're like, right, okay, let's strip it back, you know? Like, I mean, fair play, FC Barcelona have recently launched since May a Discord server. Mm-hmm. And they're just reaping the rewards from it. And it's going back to what you're both saying about saying, like, we got this one-off PR stunt kind of event thing, but afterwards, you know, have people really engaged with what you were doing, or were they just checking it out because it was like the new hip thing to do because PR media told them to go and check it out with the hype, right? Mm-hmm. Or is it you just going around just like, you know, randomly punching your friend in the arm type thing? Like, what are you actually doing? Well, then why don't you bring it into Discord as a community kind of service, and then getting people within that server to talk about what they experienced during that event, what they liked, what they didn't like, what would you improve moving forward? All of a sudden you're getting all that feedback and you could do something with it, right? Yeah. And you haven't got this static asset you don't know what to do with.
I love Discord.
Yeah, it's cool, right?
I forgot when researching this podcast how big that was in the gaming world as well.
Yeah, it's massive. Because so Barcelona have launched this server. And I suppose for those that don't know, like Discord is a platform where you can message via text and also voice with other like-minded people. And you create...
It's like Reddit a little bit.
Yeah, you create servers which are essentially like mini communities. So, mm-hmm. you know, for example, with Barcelona, you could create like, you know, last night's game or something, yeah. right? And then you go in... I'm sorry, I'm preaching to the choir with you. But you go into that server to then talk all things about last night's game and you can share content and you mm-hmm. can... you know, share videos, you can do whatever you want in there near enough. You can stream, live stream and all sorts.
Artist I love, like live stream their album release yeah. on Discord for the first time.
So smart, right? Mm-hmm. Real sidetrack, did you see Metallica launched a new album on Roblox as well?
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And it achieved like tens of millions of hits.
That's
like,
crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Metallica.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
But this has been around for like 40 something
yeah.
years.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And, well, more than that. Yeah. Yeah, crazy, right? Honestly, Google it. Yeah. Metallica Roblox. Their album launch on yeah. Roblox is exactly what every single brand should be doing. Yeah. Like, it's just right. genius.
Yeah.
So they partnered with like horror themed experiences to launch their singles oh, wow. and stuff, right? Because obviously Metallica's all
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
heavy Gothy. Metal and goth and yeah, yeah, yeah. And anyway, but yeah, to Google that. So going, jumping back to the Barcelona Discord stuff. So in May they launched on Discord. It's giving their fans a place to express their fandom, right? Something really simple, community-led, community-driven. And they're averaging 13,000 messages a day on there.
Wow.
So to put that into context, on Instagram, they get about 6,000 comments a day on their Instagram. Mm-hmm. So you're getting double the engagement already just off that. And the amount of messages they're getting from their fans all around the world in different languages, they're just like, you know, you could never achieve that on most platforms, right? Because on social media, it's kind of like a he said, she said interaction, right? Yeah. It's like comment or limited word comment.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And you know, whereas on Discord, it's an interaction. It's a genuine conversation. It's live, you know?
Yeah. And am I right in thinking you wouldn't be in that community unless you truly felt passionate about that? You don't just
yeah.
join the community.
Hitting on the head, yeah.
To troll.
Yeah,
yeah.
Just
exactly.
The community to, exactly. To be the
yeah
to be the yeah. advocate or to basically wind people up. You're there because you're trying to grow something.
Yeah, like a Real Madrid fan's not going to log into it, right? And on Discord, you have to be invited to join anyway. So again, it's self-regulating, right? But you know, with Travis Scott, for example, or some of the experiences you've had on your date or otherwise in Fortnite. Would have been great to have a Discord server, right? To go and give you feedback and interact with other people who had similar experiences. And for a brand, you can really dive deep into that.
We'll chat about those short films.
You
know, or try and improve that as an experience.
Yep.
Instead of it being just a stage screen, it would be something where, like you say, Metallica, you build a whole environment that complements the viewing experience, understands the narrative and themes of the film, and makes it feel just that much richer.
Yep.
But I've got a little wink from our producer Lucy, which might mean that we're out of time.
Any closing thoughts?
Well, there was one thing here that I think we can quickly talk about. Do you think these gamers want corporate tie-ins? And do you think they'll find it fun or just kind of annoying?
Great question to wrap it up. So the audience is very, very receptive to brands being involved in the space for a number of reasons. They see it as a way of the space being taken more seriously, which is a big thing, especially in esports. So they love to see big brands get involved because they're like, oh, this is the validation that we've been looking for, that, you know, esports is a proper thing and we should be taken seriously. So very, very receptive. On the gaming side, there's also very positive reception. However, there is kind of this brand fatigue that's happening a bit at the moment. which for me is an opportunity, because that is a way for you as a brand to flip it on its head and say, we know you're seeing X, Y, and Z launch every week on Roblox or Fortnite, whatever it is, but we really get you, and we really get you through this. So, you know, something as simple as a Discord server, right? So then earning your right to play. So you don't have to build an experience every single time. You can integrate your brand into an already popular experience. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I advise brands and I say, look, you know, this is a three-step strategy, typically. We're thinking long-term, multi-year. We start with the, you know, the why, and then we show you that path on how you earn your right to play. So it doesn't need to be a seven-figure sum every single time you interact with these platforms. Mm-hmm. You can do it on a very cost-effective basis, and it doesn't have to break the bank. And we can show you that kind of scalability in that journey to get you to where you want to be, but by doing it in a much more cost-effective, strategic way. So that's the strongest message that I have to put out there to brands. And you know, it's the best time to get involved. It's going to give you results that you could only dream of in more traditional routes. And Jen, as long as you're advised properly, like you can genuinely achieve anything you want to achieve. I live in a world where I can answer my emails in Mars if I want to, right? Yeah. It's a really cool place to be in, both from an educational standpoint, advertising, and just having fun.
And the scenery,
it's brilliant. It's
interesting.
Like, and it's a lot simpler than you think. Everyone thinks it's super complex. It's like, it's genuinely really not. And there's loads of different ways you can get involved. So yeah, it's just complete your education cycle and have a chat, I suppose.
Buzzing.
Damn.
Cool.
Ruby and Posty Discord server.
Let's do it. I like that. No, but thank you for inviting me, honestly. It's been a great opportunity, and I really appreciate it. Thank you, guys. Looking forward to hearing about your next date in Fortnite.
Cool.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
The gaming and esports scene, brought to you by Truant London. I am your host, Costi, my co-host, Ruby, the executive producer, Lucy Austin, and our technical director, Mr. Thomas Kemp.